All right, great to have you back with us on this Sunday morning. Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. Bruce, thanks for getting up early today. What a day at the old ballpark, huh?
Oh, my goodness. If you give me about an hour, I'm about halfway through my American League scenarios here. I think I'm just going to, you know, watch it and see how it goes, and you can tell us what it is. But John Heyman on Twitter is putting out all the scenarios in case anyone wants to get ahead of it. But, yeah, unbelievable. Not to mention, of course, the Giants-Dodgers drama coming right down to the wire. Unbelievable. What a couple of weeks it's been.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about it. For the Giants not to prevail here and have trouble, I mean, they'd have to lose yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And then, God forbid, a wild card game. So I don't think that's going to happen. And they get a good matchup today. And the biggest start of his life for Logan Webb today. And, Bruce, when this kid is on with that slider and changeup, and then on the other side, I hope I pronounce his name correctly, Reese Nehr, K-N-E-H-R. And the best thing for the Giants, he's walked 18 and struck out 18. For a patient team, they ought to hopefully go to lunch here.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never heard of the guy myself, but that's typical Padres that it would end it that way. But, yeah, you know, I mean, just maybe 3 weeks ago, if maybe even more recently, we were all talking about Webb as the guy to pitch the biggest game they were going to face. And that's just how good he had been. And now it's leaned toward Gausman, which is an even better situation for the Giants. And he was fantastic yesterday, absolutely justified that decision. It's the one you have to make. But Webb has been so good. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if he keeps his head and throws strikes and doesn't get a little too anxious out there. I don't think he will. I think he's kind of built for this sort of thing. And he's proved that down the stretch. So it's going to be really interesting.
Well, he's grown up a lot, and Posey undoubtedly will be in there. This one has that feel of 2010 again. It has that Jonathan Sanchez, Matt Latos feel to it for some reason. Maybe because it's a Sunday and the division's at stake.
Yeah, I hadn't quite thought of it that way, but an awful lot of past scenarios come to mind because the Dodgers and Giants have had so many things come down right to the last day. And it's worked out great for both. It's worked out terrible for both over the years. That's just how many times it's happened. But Jonathan Sanchez, let's hope, Sanchez brought his no-hit stuff. Let's hope Webb does the same.
Yeah, that's right. Look, Sanchez fell off the cliff after that. But that day he was terrific on that day. And that's what we remember. How about the crowd yesterday? 40,760. Yeah. But to Bruce, to see it and to feel the excitement and to the very last pitch, to me that was a playoff game. And for anyone who wasn't part of 10, 12, or 14, or even the disaster of 16, you got to see a playoff game yesterday, and I think we'll see it again today.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It was just so great to see the park filled. I think there were really, really good reasons for the fact that it wasn't for so long, but when it came down to a game that had that feel, it was the atmosphere was doubled or tripled by the crowd. I mean, every single pitch is just gigantic. The shadows are falling. You know, it's autumn. It reminded me of so many games, you know, in the past at Candlestick and Dodger Stadium and here. And it's one of the great things about baseball. You can count on it, and if your team's in it, it's extra special.
Well, I thought Gabe Kapler had a couple of moments, and let's chat a little bit about it. He took Gausman out, and his hand was cramping, but did he do a Russ Ortiz and put him on the mound so he could get an ovation? I hope he didn't do that. That's deja vu all over again.
Well, apparently he did. I mean, if Gausman had told him that his hand was cramping and he needed to, he wasn't, might not be the same and needed to come out, there's no reason to have him, you know, go out there and all. That's not going to be when he breaks that news. I thought when he came out for the eighth, I'm going, you know, thank you very much. This guy is absolutely in command. Great move, Gabe. And then he's coming out, and you find out later that the cramping, that kind of complicates things. But you know, I'm always adamantly against any pitcher who's just rolling. Coming out for reasons you can't quite pinpoint. Who knows, was he really unable to go on? Maybe so, or maybe he just felt like he was putting the team at risk if the hand wasn't quite right. I just would have liked to seen him give it a shot. But, boy, things sure changed when Littell came in. He wound up pitching pretty well that inning, but it's just instantly the big trouble.
Well, Littell, you know, he's got the high fastball, and it's really good. He put Tatis away. He had no chance. And he throws the pitch at the top of the strike zone, and that's what they want from him because you can't undercut it.
Right.
But here comes Machado. And, look, say what you want about Machado. He had a game yesterday in the field and at the plate, and he showed why he is, you know, a superstar. And he's
such
got Machado and Littell, and they have a tremendous at-bat. I mean, that high fastball is coming in 97-97, and he can't put it past him. And there's a runner on third, less than two out. And he's got Alvarez warming up, and he's got Cronenworth next, and maybe a righty after Cronenworth. But I said to myself, put Machado on. Don't let this guy, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And he let Littell pitch to Machado, and he got the sacrifice fly on a tough pitch. And honestly, it was 97. It was way up there. And Machado just did what Machado can do, and not many hitters can do it. And then he brings in Alvarez, who gets rid of Cronenworth in about 6 seconds. And now we got a 2-2 game at that point. And I thought that was a huge learning area for Gabe Kapler because, you know, the playoffs, you can't make a move like that in the playoffs. You've got to make your move to the, you know, the right side at that point.
Yeah, it was such a contrast. You know, Guzman was so in command. I think he threw, 84 pitches or something like that. And Littell needed 17 just on Tatis and Machado combined. You know, all of a sudden everything was different. And I was amazed they didn't put Machado on. This guy's one of the all-time greats. He really is. In the field, at the plate, he's just so ready for a big moment. And, I'm with you there. And it got a little too complicated, I think, it was a shame that it got so complicated so quickly. And, you know, the Gosman was just a memory all of a sudden.
Mm. Boy, what a game. What a game. It really was. Now, Slater hits the pinch hit home run. He's thrilled. I was so glad to see that for him. His fourth pinch hit home run of the year. He becomes a Dusty Rhodes character for the Giants. Just look that up, 1954.
Yeah.
But the Giants' 18th pinch hit home run of the year, they set a major league record. How about that?
That's a huge part of this team's success. And there's been a lot of times where it's like it's the middle of the game. You go, oh, wait, you know, don't take him out early. This game could get all haywire and you're out of people. But so many times, and right down to yesterday, it was the right move. It's usually a percentage move. Sometimes it's an instinct move. But, man, I tell you, I can't remember a team with just one after another guys coming through with pinch hit homers. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do to come off the bench cold, and they've got so many guys who do it well.
Yeah, it's terrific. And the kid was so happy, plus Stanford won. I hate to bring it up. So for Slater, he was happy about that. And so that was good for him. All right, so now we go to the ghost runner. Here we go. This has got to stop next year, I hope. But we go to the ghost runner, and then he does walk Machado. And then he brings in Garcia, and Bill Lasky did a great analysis on the postgame show of Garcia last night, and he threw his second or third best pitch, a changeup up, and Cronenworth loves that pitch, and he got the hit, and now the Padres are up 3-2.
Yeah, really, really good hitter, really good player, Cronenworth. Sometimes you wonder how the Padres could have gone so bad, but obviously the pitching was a big deal. But it's so troubling to see that runner on second, and we're not going to see it in the postseason, which is great. We'll get a month of not having that, and then we'll get used to how it's supposed to be, and hopefully we'll continue it in next season. You know, we've talked a lot about this. Almost everyone I know has seen some benefit in it because it gets you talking, you know, in the middle of June. Or whenever, but not now. I mean, in a game like this, to imagine that you're going out there and it's been this excruciating battle, and all of a sudden there's a guy on second. It's just you have a crisis that has nothing to do with you. I mean, you know, the Giants didn't pitch that badly in the tenth. It was just one pitch But, you know, that should be like a leadoff for Cronenworth or whatever. That's the first guy they get on. It's so disturbing, and it's not a total loss. I think it was worth looking at, but I think when you get down to situations like this, and this is why it won't be in the postseason.
Yeah, you can't have that. You can't.
Yeah.
It's too bad. It's part of this thing right now with the division on the line today. All right. So now one last thought. Now we get into the bottom of the 10th, and of course, Yastrzemski's on second. I thought maybe he could steal a bag, but whatever. So he stays there, and Duggar's up. Now Duggar's got trouble with Melanson, and I'm saying to myself, well, just bunt him over, and he didn't. And Melanson just punched him out. He had no chance on a curveball, and the explanation after the game was, well, Duggar's not a good bunter. And I said to myself, this is game 162. They've been playing for 7 months. You're a defensive replacement. You're going to be in the game late in the game in critical games. You better learn how to bunt. And I thought that was a major problem.
Yeah, and they mentioned having trouble bunting a curveball. Well, anybody who can bunt, that's the fact that a curveball is coming at you is not a problem at all, unless it's, you know, up around your eyes or in the dirt. If you get one you can bunt, you know, that shouldn't be a big deal. That's definitely an argument worth making. You know, then again, maybe he spanks one to the right side or maybe even gets through, you know. But Melanson is so hard to square up, Marty. He doesn't look that impressive, but he just is. He's very hard to square up. It's the ball, the movement on his ball is so unusual that it just that it takes just an inch. You know, I'm sure Flores thought he was going to tag that thing, and he popped up. He's going, damn, you know.
And too.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah.
Very, very maddening, and
you know, the great thing about Melanson is that he's cut it down to 2 minutes between pitches now.
He does walk around. He gets those legs spread.
Jeez.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Matt Hergis, I asked him this when we were doing interviews a couple of years ago about Melanson. I said, why is this guy so tough to hit? And he said, listen, the ball for 59 feet, 6 inches is right there, and for the last foot, it disappears, and it's just too late. Because it looks like an easy pitch to hit. He says the movement is so late, that's what makes him tough. And you described it well. That's exactly, you can't square him up.
Yeah, Kruko said the same thing a couple of weeks ago. He goes, nobody's ball moves quite like that. It's a guy you haven't seen, and you're going to see him just for a minute here, and you're going to be gone. You know, what a weapon. The Giants did have him for a while, and you know, he winds up in Atlanta, which is a great place for him, and now he's part of this big malaise in San Diego. But hell, he could put the Giants in a bad situation today and again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, this is going to be a bullpen game for San Diego, I think. You know,
probably,
this
pitcher,
yeah. He doesn't go very many innings, and it should be in the Giants' favor. What can I say? But it's baseball, and you know, anything can happen. A ball could hit the bag, and somebody hits a three-run homer, and all of a sudden you're playing catch-up. So you got to go out there and win the game. A couple of things. One, Doval. Let's finish up the Giants on Doval. Bruce, this guy gets in trouble in the ninth inning. They try to put the lights on. It takes forever. And he's got to stand out there. He gives up two hits. And then all of a sudden, here comes that slider, chain, whatever it is. And then he'll throw 102. He's awfully good. What do you do with him? Where do you put this guy? Do you give him a role here?
Well, first of all, he's on the roster, whatever postseason you're looking at. And I think if they actually get into a series, you know, a best of five, I would absolutely give him a shot at closing. Maybe you give McGee the first shot, you know, if he's completely over the oblique thing, because you know he's awfully good too. He's done it all year. It's kind of like a Solomon Torres, Scott Sanderson kind of thing. Are you really going to ride this kid? He looks so good, but do you go with a veteran? You don't want it to be Dave Gultz.
don't take that pitch again, Art.
instead of Fernando Valenzuela. But this is one of those guys.
Valenzuela is a better comparison. Who's like, oh my God, this kid, you know, and I would have no problem having him close out even the 163 or the wild card. But okay. I think if they get into a series, I think they'll both get a shot, and then that's a great situation because, especially if you're looking at it, you know, a daily, you know, late inning game. But I don't think you turn your back on this kid. He is absolutely confident, and that slider is a wipeout pitch, and he throws 100. Come on.
And he has command of it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's not wild. And gave up two hits, and, boy, he just shut it down after that. That was impressive. What do you think about now Burns went a couple innings for Milwaukee yesterday. Who knows? They announced Brett Anderson goes for them today. What do you think about teams that have, teams that have sort of, you know, they're in already, and then they play a meaningful game against a team that's trying to get in, and they sort of make it a spring training game?
Yeah, well, the Padres certainly aren't doing that, although today it might take on that look. I mean, you know, I think you owe it to everybody to play your guys, but it's just not the same feel. You've got a team that's absolutely desperate, and it might as well be Game 7 of the World Series. And for you, you just don't want anybody to get hurt. You know, I don't jump all over the Brewers, you know, for whatever went down. I mean, you know, today with Anderson going, I mean, both Turner's are going to homer, Pollock's going to homer, and Muncy's going to homer. And then we'll have the fourth inning.
Yeah, right. Say that's the first time through, right?
Yeah.
They've hit 17 homers in four games.
Yeah, they're insane. I mean, that one game where they hit the four homers in the eighth inning was unbelievably clutch and inspiring. Even if you hate the Dodgers, that was just amazing. They're just homering. They're going crazy. I can't see them even stopping today at all. I think if the Giants lose, you know, it's not going to be good because those guys are on fire. But it's unfortunate. We've talked about this. It's a reason you can't play the scheduled game. You know, that looks like the Dodgers have it the toughest because they play Milwaukee. Well, maybe they have it the easiest, you know.
Yeah.
You're playing a scrappy team that's in it or is really in it or just wants to finish out in a wildly competitive nature. You just don't know what you're going to see.
Well, you wrote about the Cards. We didn't touch upon it yesterday. We kind of forget them in the midst of all this chaos here. If the Giants do what they should do today with Webb, and I firmly believe they're going to do it, the Dodgers get the Cardinals, and you wrote a long story about the Cardinals, and you can't take them lightly.
No, and especially in one game with Wainwright out there working with Molina. You know, that's been a partnership since 2005 or 2006. I love the lineup, you know, anchored by Goldschmidt and Arenado. I mean, nobody's more familiar with those guys than the Giants fans. Is they'd come to Candlestick and just wreak havoc every single time with Arizona or Colorado, whoever they were with. Harrison Bader's really coming into his own as a star. You know, you got guys like Tommy Edman out there and Tyler O'Neill. You know, he's pumping iron and then he goes out and makes a great throw and steals a base and hits a 500-foot homer. I mean, and you know, Molina back there matching Posey with the Hall of Fame credentials and. What an interesting team they are. I really have been enjoying them getting as far as they did. They went 17 straight, but they've got so much veteran leadership, and it that stuff really matters. They're gonna put up a good fight whoever they get.
Heck of a game. They've won 19 of 20, 19
Jeez.
Of 20, and that's what they've done. Ron Wotus, this is his last game as an active coach. At third base, and I know he didn't want to have that pressure of a crazy game today, and he wanted to enjoy it. But this is his last game in the end of an era for him. He'll probably be part of the teaching part of the Giants next year, where he loves working with the players, and he loves being on the radio, too, and TV. So your thoughts on Wotus?
No, I just can't speak highly enough of Wotus. He's a man of great class and dignity and has really aspired to be a manager. And, you know, I think you and I would agree that he could manage a big league team in a second. It didn't happen for him. Who knows how some of those interviews went, to bad breaks or whatever. He always winds up back with the Giants. But when he does, he treats it like the best job he could possibly have. And, you know, for him to step into the third base coaching box in the wake of Tim Flannery, like a cult hero and a legend and the best I've ever seen, and without a hitch. I mean, how many times have you said, what the hell is Votis doing there, you know? And a third base coach, things can really go bad. Next thing you know, you got the whole town on you, you know. And they're all waving their arms, you know, making fun of the guy. But Votis is very, very smart. He does his homework. He checks the throwing arms right up to date. And he's such a smart guy, really, really invaluable to the Giants. And, you know, this year, he they have a bench coach who looks like he's about 12 years old. Votis could have steamed about that. But he does his thing. You know, he's really big on the defensive alignments. And for all the times we complain about, you know, geez, I hate these shifts, and when are they going to get rid of it? So many times the Giants shift takes hits away. It's been pretty remarkable to watch. You know, a ball's up the middle, which you just automatically think is a base hit, and there's a guy right there, Crawford or whatever. And it's been very consistent how their strategy has paid off in that regard. And a lot of it comes back to Votis.
Yeah, and I always tell him that he's a shortstop, and that was his position. And at coaching third, he's still playing the game.
Yeah,
in other words,
exactly.
When the ball is hit, he's on the field as a shortstop. And that's where his instinct comes in. Good. I'm glad we could touch upon that. Well, you said it earlier, Giants-Dodgers, 1962, Giants beat the Dodgers in the last playoff game 6-4 and go on to the World Series. That's a good omen for today.
Oh, yeah. I love the idea of a best of three when you get to this point. And that was so interesting. The Giants won the opener 8-0 at Candlestick, the first of the best of three. And Koufax was pitching for the Dodgers, and they lit him up. Mays homered, Davenport homered, but Koufax had a bad circulatory condition in his index finger, and he missed a couple of months, and he just wasn't the same. And Billy Pierce pitched the game of his life, 8-0. Then they come back in game two. It looks like the Giants are going to make it an easy win, and the Dodgers get 7 runs in the sixth. Lee Walls, out of nowhere, comes up with one of the greatest hits in Dodgers history. It would really be remembered if they'd won the thing. Big 3-run double. So they get down to the showdown. It's the ninth inning of game three. The Giants are down 4-2. And Don Larson is due up to hit the Mr. Perfect game from the 56 World Series. And Matty Alou of the Alou brothers pinch hits for him and singles to right. He gets forced by Keene. And here now it's Chuck Hiller. But wait, the pinch hitter is Willie McCovey. Is pinch hitting for – you like that deal. McCovey for Hiller. He walks on 4 pitches. You know, Ed Roebuck's going, holy God, if it doesn't come close. Then he walks Felipe Alou. And the bases are loaded for Mays. So all of a sudden, everything changes. The Dodgers' momentum is completely gone. Mays hits a shot that almost knocks Roebuck into center field.
Yeah,
he can't field it, and then it's a hit, and now it's 4-3. And the Dodgers make an ill-fated move that will always be remembered. I was a Dodger fan back then. I'm only a high school kid, and I'm over that now, everybody. But I was a Dodger fan then, and they bring in Stan Williams. First of all, Cepeda hits a sacrifice fly, of course, to right field, deep to right field. It ties the game. But now with Ed Bailey up, Williams throws a wild pitch. The runners are at second and third now. Now you got to walk Bailey. Then he walks Jim Davenport with the bases loaded, and the Giants have the lead. I mean, everybody's heart sank in L.A. It's like Stan friggin' Williams.
Amazing.
And then another run scored on an error by Larry Burright. I don't know how he even got in the game, but he pinch hit for Hiller, and it wound up 6-4, and you can still see Mays making the last out and going crazy, and the Giants were just that was such a great moment because those teams they had they could have it seemed like they could have played in 4 or 5 World Series, and it was so great that they did get to one.
Boy, great review of a great moment, and Mays throws that ball into the stands after he catches it in center field. Boy, that was it, 1962. We're not going to talk about 1993 on this date with Solomon Torres. We'll leave that one alone. That one alone and just wish Logan Webb the best today to get it done. Bruce, for us, this is, I think, almost 20 years that you and I have been doing this every weekend. So another great year. And, crazy things can happen, but I assume we're going to have a show next Saturday. But, 20 years for you and I, it's been amazing.
keeps us young, Marty. I really love it, and I learn a lot every week, and it's just it's very stimulating to talk ball, both past and present, with you, man. It's been a real privilege.
I love it. All right, have a good day, and we'll catch up during the week. Thanks, Bruce.
You got it. Thanks, Marty.
All right, that is Bruce Jenkins here on this Sunday morning. Wow, I'm ready for baseball today. All right, we'll take a break. Bill and I will chat with Mark Simon of Sports Info Solutions right after these messages on KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.